Welcome. It's the Long Coat Mafia, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia podcast, the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. And this week we bring you ECBRO Second Annual Bigfoot Convention. That's right, we were invited out to cover this show and tell everybody what we thought, what we've seen, so forth and so on. That's this particular episode. We have two interviews that we'll be giving to you, plus a couple little bit of extras. And I want to say this, not to mention you'll have our review with me and Big Candy. We want to give out, even though you'll hear it on our review, special thanks to not just Daniel Benoit, but the person, I think her name was Christine from the hotel there, that she allowed us to hook up into their system, their sound system. Now, granted, obviously they had a bigger board or a better board in back to control the sound. So basically we could not touch that. We couldn't touch the board on their end. And even though we had our own board and we're able to, in essence, hook up to it through a outlet in the wall. So there's nothing we can do with a lot of the sound, but it came in way better than what happened at last year's Paracon. So we got a crap ton of audio. A lot of it very, very good. So I'm looking forward to bring all of you those panels that we were able to record. For those of you who are listening to this and you're waiting on your panel, thank you for letting us record your panel. It'll be there. We'll preface all your panels, let everybody know who you are. And I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you so much, Daniel, and everybody else for letting us be there and get our interviews and so forth and so on. So I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to give all of you our, me and Big Candy's review and thoughts on the event. So here it is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I won't say welcome back, but I hope you enjoyed the intro. We just got done, we just got done with the ECBRO Second Annual Bigfoot Convention.
Right.
In Waynesboro, not Pennsylvania, Virginia.
The less popular of the two Waynesboros.
Exactly.
If you put in Waynesboro in any search engine, PA comes up first.
Right.
I don't know if that's because it's alphabetical. I guess that might be why.
But it's kind of quiet here, that for the most part.
Yeah.
Overall.
It's kind of a throwback a little bit.
Very much. But the thing is, before we get into the convention itself and our thoughts, I want to say, even though I probably did in the intro, special shout out to, I think her name was Christine.
Chris? I don't know.
I think her badge said Christine.
Okay.
From, it was the Holiday Inn?
No, Best Western.
Best Western here in Waynesboro, Virginia. Because she was the IT, or at least the sound person or the media person.
She was a media person.
The person, in essence, the person in charge of the conference room.
Right.
And I think she was kind of surprised that she had two people that kind of knew what they were doing.
Which is good.
With at least sound stuff, because she was like, oh, you're setting up because we were initially going semi-full tilt for the show. And they're like, she was like, you know, we got an outlet in the wall that you could just plug a mic into, like, you don't say.
Right. Show us this hole.
Kind of hole is this? I'm from Martinsburg. There's odd holes around town. You have to be more specific.
That's what she said.
But sure enough, in the wall there was the a plug-in for an actual microphone cord.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I brought our soundboard with us, a portable soundboard, which allowed us to record a lot of the panels that happened today. Not a lot. I don't know if they can. We're not going to really go into that right now in regards to one that we could not record. As much as we would have been happy to record it for you, the stipulations to kind of kindly go into, they only allowed us 15 minutes of it. And
I'm not even going to give them the shout out because I don't care.
That's why I'm not saying who they were.
Right.
But for the most part, everybody else there were great folks. We got a chance to see Mark Byrne and Matt Burns, no relation. They were there trying to... I'm going to say this. I'm going to respect their hustle in reference to what they were trying to do.
Right. I just don't think the crowd was super receptive.
I think that's the thing. It's like I respect what they were trying to do.
I think I'm being kind.
But that doesn't mean...
No,
it might have been...
Like Matt said when I talked to him, he said it was a hit at North Carolina, like, you know, Fear Fest or whatever it was called.
Right.
Like, people loved it. You put it in front of the wrong audience, you're going to get a weird reaction. And I think that, you know, this might have been the wrong audience, but hey.
Honestly, Mark, if you're listening,
yeah,
we respect your hustle.
For
full
sure.
Tilt. You're a great guy. You're a nice guy. Again, we respect your hustle. But overall, what did you think about the show?
What, the movie?
Ask
me that. the movie, or the show was great. I thought, well, it was for Daniel doing this pretty much on his own and being his second year. The people that he got out, as far as like the speakers, were really,
right,
really good for the most part. I think that he did good, like with the events going on. It was a little bit of a timing issue and stuff like
right.
that, but I think that those are kinks that will work themselves out.
I think that
in the long run.
I think I overheard somebody said that this was their first year, even though this was their second show overall in reference to the annual Bigfoot convention.
Right.
This was their first time at this venue.
Okay.
So I think even though it being a first time at this venue, that's what might have hurt the show overall, because
right.
you had a little bit of a bleed from the vendors
right.
into the conference area. And if you're trying to get information from someone who was a presenter, whom might have been even Daniel himself,
right.
there could have been in a way that you were interrupting that panel.
Right.
And I think overall
that kind of happened at the end,
right.
which was not good.
So we're not. Overall, it was a great show, but I don't know exactly how he could have expanded.
Well,
that.
You know what I think. And
I think overall there was a good turnout for it.
It was a good turnout, and it was a good show, but
very interesting topic to cover.
Well, and the other thing. That's the other thing. Like, I think you could probably do a Bigfoot show on its own again. And I think a lot of people, there's a lot of places to do Bigfoot shows, but I'd be more apt to see more than just Bigfoot. I'd rather want to see like a whole paranormal experience.
Kind of, again, Daniel, if you're listening, nothing against you, but you're thinking more along the lines of what the Roundhouse Paranormal Convention was doing last year with
right.
not just
yeah.
where, even though that was more so
ghosts. But there was, I mean, there was a crypto person there.
Right, and there was somebody who was a
psychic medium.
Not so much psychic medium, but I'm talking about the guy that was kind of a Bigfoot hunter, but he was kind
yeah,
of a
yeah.
crypto. Not,
well,
I'm not talking about
the
guy
Frank Bennett?
Yeah.
Well, there's also the other guy who did he was talking about.
I mean, the Terror in the Woods guy.
Yeah.
So, I think you were thinking more rounded instead of just pinhole. pigeonholed it to one topic.
And the thing is, no, and it's not that it didn't work. It worked just fine. It's just I would personally rather do like a more broader event.
But that covers just, a little bit more.
That's just me. I mean, honestly, like, I know that there's a big enough audience of, like, Bigfoot enthusiasts to actually have an event like this, but I would see it, like, on a national scale. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, not so much of a regional show. I don't think you're going to get, like, 1,000 people turn out for a regional Bigfoot show. I think, like, if there was a big national Bigfoot convention,
I think
you would get a lot more people.
I think that's why, for someone to kind of veer away a little bit, where you and I are kind of curious to see what an alien con looks like, because that is a not only alien show, pardon the visual pun, but it's a national convention.
But it's a national convention.
To see how that kind of, again, we're not knocking what Daniel is doing any way, shape, or form, because a lot of times if there is a national Bigfoot convention or a national ghost hunters convention, and I use that as a broad umbrella term. But if there are, they are, I think the only one I know of is AlienCon, but I think we both found that out through Facebook or something like that, or Baltimore's promoting the hell out of it being in Baltimore, and that's how we found out.
Now it's in Texas this year.
It's, I think they...
Or somewhere, I can't remember.
They did it in Baltimore, then it was in L.A. or Las Vegas.
Something like that.
So I think it's a roaming, like how Star Wars Celebration is. It's kind of a roaming show.
Yeah.
But it, and there's nothing wrong with that. That gives
everybody a
chance to host it. And it's not strictly in California or strictly New York. It allows, Baltimore is close to a lot of people in our area.
Yeah.
So, despite what a lot of people might think, Baltimore is very close. You get people from New York coming, people from our area coming, but
it's actually easier to get to Baltimore for me. It feels like it's easier to go to Baltimore than it is to D.C.
But the thing is, a show like Daniel's is like what I would say, what we attribute to what Matt does. It brings a lot of folks who might be interested locally that might not know.
I was going to say, there's a pretty good turnout for this town. If you want to say that.
Yeah.
Like, this place, like, out of people that are unfamiliar, I'm unfamiliar, it seems like it's got that real small town vibe.
It did seem like, I want to say that was kind of like threw me off a little bit. Not just that here's a local convention for Bigfoot, that it had a pretty decent turnout for the equivalent size of the show.
Right.
And age of the show.
Right.
Which, overall, for someone like Daniel, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Granted that there were probably a couple of errors, one of which we touched on was how the vendor booths were set up.
Mm-hmm. And the timing.
And the timing. But
other than that, I mean, those are just little hiccups. If you
Everything that once, even though it's been 2 years, once Daniel, I think, gets his true footing,
mm-hmm.
That's something that he could easily... Or he gets partnered up with the right folks.
But as far as like quality of the show,
you're right.
I thought it was on point, top notch.
Right.
So he did a real good job.
I know we had an MC doing the panels, mm-hmm. introducing the panels. We did get an interview with him. Not so much interview. We recorded a little bit of one of his stories that he was telling a lot of the folks. I will be introducing that little bit probably after this review. We also have a lot of, at least two interviews from the folks that were there. At least one of them was presenters. Long day, folks. It's been a long day for me.
Presentinos.
presenters. But even though we couldn't get his panel, not the people that we were talking about earlier, but... just that when we left, it was just like both of us were just kind of wore out and tired.
Kind of Bigfooted out.
But we got an interview with him, and we got an interview with another person. So we'll after this, you'll hear me introduce those interviews and include them here. And that story, we thank everybody that allowed us to record their panel. We thank all the people that let us interview, especially Daniel.
Class act, good guy.
Class act. We tried to get as much as we could from this, but I don't think I got a lot of the videos I wanted to get. But yeah,
that's true.
It's, I think what we did get, we did a good job. Mm-hmm. Personally, that's up to Daniel to decide, but at least we tried to go at least full tilt with this as much as we could.
Yeah. I don't think it was a bad show.
And when we released, folks, when we released the panels for you, like what happened, I will say this, the panel recordings will be much better sound-wise.
Yes.
There might be a few instances where there will be some trimming in it. It's not going to be due to sound issues this time. It's going to be due to how the system was set up. So it was a different problem than it was last time, but drastically improved. So please stay tuned to them. We'll introduce them. I'll do the same deal. Type of ordeal I did with the Paracon panels, which means I'll give you all the standard disclaimers. Pretty much if anything was cut out or boosted, if need be, we'll let you all know what was what in that particular panel. So please, everyone, stay tuned to the rest of this episode, because we do have those interviews, and that's that gentleman's pretty much his stories.
Oh, yeah.
So that way no one is left out, and this is us just giving you the review, our thoughts about the ECBRO's second annual Bigfoot Con, and a little bit of the coverage that we did today.
Yeah.
So please stay tuned to where you atypically get our podcast. That way you could be in touch, not in touch, but be able to snag the panels and the rest of the coverage that we did as soon as they're dropped. Thank you. We are out.
Hey, everybody. I'm back. I hope you enjoyed our review. Just wanted to let you know, first up, in regards to our show coverage, even though you just heard our thoughts on it, I just want to give you all of you the show coverage itself. And first up is our review with Joe from Chaos Mountain Brewing Company. And he was there showcasing his Sasquatch Ale. And it was a wonderful interview about him being an independent brewer and the stuff that he makes and his his struggles. But him being an independent brewer in such a wider market now and dealing with some of the bigger fellows out there. So let's go right to the interview right now.
Hey, everybody. I am here with
Joe Halleck.
And you are the owner and proprietor of Chaos Mountain. Is it ale or just brewing in general?
Chaos Mountain Brewing.
And you're here to promote, I think it's Sasquatch Ale today?
Yes, we actually have a Scotch Ale that we named Squatch.
I must say, I did try it earlier today. It almost reminds me almost like a Guinness. Not as thick, but it almost has that same type of bite to it.
It's a flavorful Scottish ale. It's also known as a wee heavy. So it's generally a higher alcohol beer.
Would you think that it's more of a winter type of beer, or is it for any time?
It's for any time. It's actually our number one selling beer.
So Sasquatch has been out for a while.
5 years.
5 years?
Yeah.
Has it been, if I may, has it been successful in any way?
Yeah, it wasn't at first, but after about the second year, it actually became our number one selling beer.
And so it's caught on. You know, I'm not despising the name in any way, shape, or form. It's just something that most people might not expect a beer to be named. So.
Well, it was named after my son's best friend from high school, who's 6'5" and weighs about 350 pounds. And that was his nickname, was Squatch. So It's a great food beer. Anything roasted or grilled, and or spicy like chili. So it's just really good, easy drinking beer.
I could see it being almost like a beer for a barbecue, mm-hmm. like you said, having with chili or just sitting down, that type of beer. But on other note, you are in an independent brewing agency.
We're an independent company.
So has it been, I know we've interviewed independent brewers before. Have you run into a lot of issues being an up-and-coming brewery, or?
Not necessarily. Well, I mean, originally we did. We opened over 5 years ago, so we've been in the market for quite a while. We were number 41 or 42 in the state of Virginia, and at this point now there's almost 300. So we were able to get started before the real boom. So we actually package and distribute pretty much statewide. To do that today would be a pretty tough road to hoe.
So are you looking to expand outside
yes,
the state? Or is there... I know there's a lot of legality of going to a state like Maryland or Tennessee or so forth and so on. I'm sure there's a lot of red tape and textbook stuff.
It's dealing with the bureaucracy of each individual state. Everyone has their own separate rules and regulations. So we are actually in the process of meeting with someone about expanding a distribution into West Virginia now.
I've heard that's kind of... I think they eased some of their laws mm-hmm. a bit. Because I think for a long while, Yingling wasn't available in West Virginia for some weird reason. Now they are, so I think they kind of loosened up a few of the rules and regulations.
I know that their alcohol content regulations would have prohibited us from bringing some of the beers that we make, because we do make some high alcohol beers from 8.5%, 10% to up to 18%.
Wow, 18%. Is that, are those limited run type of ales?
The 8.5 is a Belgian quad, and the 10% is our Agents of Chaos special dark ale. It's a Belgian also. And those are both year-round production beers for us. But the 18% beer is a Belgian special strong dark ale at 18% that we call Theory of Chaos, and we only brew it once a year in the winter.
It would be very interesting to taste...
It is.
To taste as well as to get a hold of in the area. Hopefully I can travel down into Virginia, because I am a West Virginia resident.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of tough to get certain beers in West Virginia than it is here in Virginia. So hopefully one of these days when I'm at a local event closer to me, I'll be able to pick up that 18%. And give it a try and go, whoa, or have it on order. That way somebody could bring it to me, because obviously you can't ship the beer over state lines. A lot of breweries going to say, we can't do that.
There are some rules and regulations you can get around, but the biggest problem is if your state does allow you to ship and you have a license to ship, that doesn't mean that the other states will allow you to ship to them.
Right.
So there's a lot of regulations about shipping beer. There's a lot of states that don't allow it.
So it's nice to know that a lot of, I don't want to say sticking it to the larger brewers, but it's good to see someone like yourself kind of putting pressure, saying, hey, there's a market for folks like me giving a independent difference to someone like Budweiser or Yingling or Coors mm-hmm. or something like that. And have you seen more and more folks saying, hey, I used to be a Budweiser drinker or a Coors drinker, now I'm enjoying your brand?
Oh, definitely. We have beers in every style. We have 18 beers on tap in the tasting room. So we have everything from a 4.3% beer to the 18%. So we have a Pilsner that's a great transitional beer for people who are used to the more commercial brands. We also do the beer, one of the beers we brought with us today is a summer seasonal. It's a Mexican lime lager. So it's a 4.7%, very easy drinking beer. So there's something for everybody. I always say that if you can't find a beer at our brewery that you like, you probably should be at a winery.
Again, this is going to be a question you don't have to answer at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to answer, please just feel free to let us know. Have you experienced any pushback from the larger fellows in the industry, or because I know that in years past, the bigger fellows in the industry were pushing back hard against independent folks like yourself. Have you experienced any of that? Or again, you don't have to answer if you don't want to.
There's always some pushback against breweries from not only the restaurant associations, but also from the wholesale distributors. There are actually states, New Jersey just passed a law that they have to pay their distributor for beer they sell at their brewery. So even though the distributor never actually picks it up or does anything with it, they still have to give them a percentage. So they're very powerful lobbies. So
I think West Virginia either still has or had something similar, because there was a winery in, if I'm remembering correctly, a winery in our state that in order to sell their beer at their location, they had to sell it to the distributor and buy it back from them, even though they made it there, and they were just losing money hand over fist because of this aspect.
No margin. Yeah.
And I think they changed it so they allowed it to, that they didn't really have to do it, or it had to be at a reduced markup. So it's been many years since that article came out in our local paper, so please don't quote me on it.
Yeah, hopefully they've remedied that.
So I think they did, but I'm not sure exactly what the full outcome was. Folks at home, if you're listening to this interview and you're familiar with that case, please let us know in one of the many social media outlets that we provide, and let us know in regards to that case. We'll be happy to be informed for that. And I know this interview was very quick. I do appreciate speaking with you, sir.
It's nice to meet
you. Welcome to this event if this is your first time here.
Yes, it is our first time here. We're enjoying ourselves.
Hello, everyone. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Joe from Chaos Mountain Brewing. Up next is Ted Van Son from Paratalkradio.com. Basically, this is going to be his backstory, if you will, in reference to how he got into researching Bigfoot and everything else. Let me just warn you, again, we were plugged into the conference room's sound system. We tried the best we could to make sure everything was picking up, but even though we had our own equipment to record everything, we were not allowed to touch their equipment or the hotel's, the conference center's equipment. So the best thing we could do is make sure it was on our end, not really like the people were trying to eat the microphone. So we tried the best we could. This is, again, Ted talking about how he started researching Bigfoot. So we tried. Nothing of his was cut down or anything like that. We just felt that we wanted to include his tale, his backstory. And again, this was not like Paracon when people refused to use the mic. Any and all issues that we had was probably either the connection between our soundboard and the hotel soundboard, and how the mics were. They were not wired mics, but they were wireless mics. So there might have been some connection issues. So you might hear some of that. So I just wanted to warn you all in regards to that. So here is Ted's backstory.
But if anybody wants to come in here and sit down, we'll get started again. I got my own story I'm going to share with you. I'll start it out by saying I am a New York boy. I was born in New York State, but I've lived in Texas, I've lived in Oklahoma, I've lived in Tennessee, and I've lived in Colorado. And I'll tell you, there are some strange things in Colorado. But my experience was actually in New York. I am not a believer, so don't throw anything at me, okay? But I am not a believer. I am a 50-50 man. There's a lot of stuff out there. First off, let me just say, I'm a paranormal investigator for 32 years. That's a long time. And people ask me all the time, what do you do? I research in my mind, a true paranormal investigator researches everything in the unknown. That includes Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, hauntings, and the Dogman, and so much more, like the Mothman, Pardwitches, whatever you want to call those little critters. And my experience was 3 years ago. I was in a house in upstate New York that sits in a 4-million-year-old swamp. Now, I don't know a lot about Bigfoot, only what I read, what I hear, conventions like this. And recently, I became a member of Squatch Detective, ran by Steve Culls out of New York City. And we were investigating this swamp, this 4-million-year-old swamp. We were walking down the path between a cornfield and the swamp. Now in New York, you know, and I'm pretty sure here too, before you get into the swamp, there's a lot of other foliage around. You get trees, you get all that stuff. Thickets. You know, there's a lot of things in there to where a normal human being can't get in there. Not with any ease, anyways. Deer and your little creatures that know that and they have their trails, they can. Well, this was about 7 o'clock at night, so you know, about 7 o'clock, it's not quite day and it's not quite night. And we're walking the trail. Now, keep in mind, we have found odd footprints there. And what I mean by odd is they were bigger than my foot. I have a 13-inch foot, so I wear a 13-inch sneaker. That's a pretty good-sized foot. I mean, who has a big foot here? Seriously, you got a big foot? All right. So you know when you go to buy sneakers or a pair of shoes, it's usually pretty hard for you to find something. I have a cousin that wears a size 15. Now that's a big foot. We used to call him Sasquatch for fun when we were growing up. So we go down this laneway between the corn and the swamp. Now, let's keep in mind also that this swamp is 4 million years old. Well, in New York State, they used to go into these swamps and dig up, like, bones, dinosaur bones and stuff like that. They used to dig up mastodon bones out of this swamp. And y'all know what a mastodon is, right? Like a huge elephant with fur. I dated a girl like that once. Anyways, we decided, let's set up some trail cams, let's set up recorders, set up some night vision cameras out in the lot. While we're doing this, you know, you hear coyotes singing and chitter-chatter, little animals and stuff like that. So we come up around this bend that we hadn't been. I'm like, well, geez, there's a nice little cove right there. Let's stick a camera in there and let's see what happens. Now, I'm new to the Bigfoot world at that point. I had just joined Squatch Detective, so I didn't have a lot of experience, I guess, the best way to put it. But I am a tracker. I am a hunter. Okay? So I'm watching. I'm looking down. I don't see anything except deer tracks, raccoon, a couple little mink. I come around the corner, and I hear something so wild. I don't know about you guys, but when you hear something you've never ever heard before and it puts you on that type of thing, you're kind of like, man, I just filled my pants, right? Because it you don't know what it is. I can tell you this. This is what I heard. Thump, thump, thump. And then nothing. And it was going through this swamp. So I'm thinking, thump, thump, thump. It's only 3 big, like, feet, you know? That's it. So I'm thinking, no way. No way is there a Bigfoot in Bergen, New York. No way. Shortly after that, we tried tree knocks. We got tree knocks back. So I figured, okay, I'm going to do my best impression of a whoop. You don't want to hear it, trust me. But we ended up with, believe it or not, a trail cam with something. All I can describe to you is like if a mastodon was alive, we got his foot. Because it was hairy and long fur. And everybody that was there swore it was a Bigfoot. That was my first experience in the Bigfoot world. I didn't see anything. I just heard thump, 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 but in the water. Now, you guys are hunters. How many are hunters here? Okay. Do you hear a thump, thump, thump when a deer is running through the water? No, you don't. So we had come to a conclusion it had to be something bipedal. Had to be. There was nobody else out there. We're in a place where it's protected. We're the only people allowed there. You have to have permission to be in this 4-million-year-old swamp. So to us, that was what we needed. We needed to hear something. The next morning, after we reviewed all that stuff, we went back to that corner. We actually found prints. 22 inches. 22 inches. And I said, has my cousin Roy been here? He's got 15 inch, you know, maybe he slid in the mud. But yeah, that was my first experience. I'd say it was awesome. It didn't make me a believer to 100%, but when something like that shocks you, you're just kind of like, man, that was cool. I want to do it again. So I started doing more of these events, and I'm glad that Daniel asked me to come here. So I just want to say thank you to Daniel Benoit one more time for putting this on. Please give him another round of applause. Thank you to the lecturers so far here. This is a great attendance for this. And, you know, I wish everybody walks away from here with something that they didn't know before. Because I think that's why these events happen, is because you come to a place where there's a common belief, a common core of something that gives you a little sense of what you didn't have before. In the paranormal world, we call it an arrow. When you're researching in the paranormal field, whether it's be Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, or so on and so forth, you're always looking for that arrow, something that pushes you to the next step. So if anybody in this facility today gives you that arrow, take it and run with it and see what your next step's going to be, because that's how it improves. That's how all of us in this field become a little more knowledgeable. All right. Alex, are you ready?
Hey, all. As you can see with Ted Van Sun's, in essence, backstory as told by Ted himself. And Ted, special thanks to you for allowing us to record your, record to allow us to include your backstory and the tale that you told. I feel that's the wrong word for it, but we thank you for allowing us to include this and part of our initial convention coverage. Now, next up is one of the presenters that was there. His name is Michael Cook. He initially didn't want us to do a interview. And Michael, thank you for allowing us to do the interview. I'm sorry that it felt a little bit rushed. It's just that we thought we were kind of busy, or at least I was kind of busy in regards to trying to get as much coverage with this event. And folks at home, Mike pretty much said no to a panel, us recording his panel, but yes to an interview. So we're happy to have his interview and share a lot of his thoughts with us. And enough of me rambling. Let me just include his interview right here. Hey, folks, we are here with Michael Cook. I'm just making sure that this is recording, that's all. Dang the sun glare. So you're one of the many Bigfoot researchers here at the ECBRO conference. What got you started in researching Bigfoot?
I had a sighting back in October of 2000. It's been almost 20 years. It's funny to think about that now because I don't feel like it's been that long. But
weird, isn't it?
It's weird. Time really flies. It really does. And I had a sighting. It was a freak incident. Just really surprising. It actually fell off a hill in front of me into a river. Took a wrong step, slipped, tripped, done something. And when it happened, I didn't really believe in Bigfoot. In fact, if you'd asked me if I believed in Bigfoot, first I'd have said, what is that? And then I'd said, seriously, who believes in Bigfoot? Crazy people. People who say they've seen Bigfoot are liars. Then all of a sudden, I became that crazy liar in a blink of an eye. So I started thinking, you know, is this, these things are real. I'm not lying. And I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy.
You're not in the realm of close to like Alex Jones and
I wouldn't throw names, but I'm not as far as some people out there. And I look at things pretty black and white. But I also look at all the colors that make up black and all the colors that make up white. And the spectrums that cause that. So there's a right answer and a wrong answer to everything. There's no in-betweens. So in the search of Bigfoot in the last 20 years, 19 if you want to get technical, it's boiling down. Everything's starting to come together now. And there's more theories that are making sense.
Like what?
The fact of that they may be some kind of supernatural aspect to this. Instead of just a flesh and blood undiscovered form of primate. That's where I was at 20 years ago, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, when I started noticing some spooky stuff that went on that I couldn't just explain with, it's a undiscovered monkey. I can't explain it with that, because chimpanzees don't do this, gorillas don't do this, or orangutans don't do this, you know, bonobos. I read a lot. Bonobos are making fire now. They're cooking their food.
I think when I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast with what's his name from, who pretty much opened the book for Area 51.
Yeah.
And he said, he mentioned the same thing, that they're pretty much in the Stone Age. The
Stone Age.
Mm-hmm. I know it's really early in our interview, but if you'll allow me to remove my show's hat and put a tin foil hat on for the time being.
Hey, we'll get crazy. Let's do this.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Daniel when I had him on my show.
Okay.
For the longest time, there have been a sect of people who believe in giants that roam the planet. Do you
think the Nephilim?
Do you kind of believe that there could be a connection that these might be those mythical?
This is going on the record.
You don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
No, I will. This is going on the record, and then you can quote me on this. The Bible, although one of the greatest books to ever be written, it still makes it a book. And a lot of the stories that come from the Bible are not meant to be taken literal. Now, I say that to segue into this. A giant to those of the biblical age were not giants to what we see a giant as. They were not Jack and the Beanstalk giants. These were David and Goliath, okay? Goliath, I read this about Goliath the other day, that Goliath was part of a group of giants, a family, if you will. And these guys, they said that they could have been the product of angel-human intermingling, interbreeding, crossbred. So when you get into that, you come up with a super being that a rock from a slingshot killed. Now, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Chris.
Chris, in your opinion, do you think you'd kill a super being with a rock?
No, I don't think so, but I don't know their...
The context.
The context and their... Being a person of today's day and age, wouldn't know so much of how what their anatomy looked like. Let me explain
I'll explain it like this. Back then, during those times, not everybody knew what a elephant skull looked like.
No.
And if they, someone in, this has broke up, been backed up by research, like modern day research, if they found a elephant skull on the beach in Greece, they would take it to their local scholar or priest, and they would say, well, obviously this is a skull of a cyclops. Yeah. Look at it. So it's nowadays to see the way you explain what Nephilim or giant back then, it's kind of hard to say, well,
there was
in my mind,
a lot of unknown.
Right, a lot of unknown. What's their skull structure like? How thick is it? We don't, this is stuff that...
Well, the thing about it is, too, is a giant back then, the average size of man was around 5 foot, 5 foot two, something like that. Jesus Christ hung on the cross. He was only 5 foot one, 5 foot two. He wasn't a very tall man at all, 33 years old. He wasn't right. A very tall man, and that was the average height of a person back then, and actually his age. And 01 AD, or 033 AD, that age was actually a very middle-aged man coming up into his prime. And they didn't live long back then. You're talking 40, 45, 50 years, and you're dying of old age. If infection or whatever didn't get you back then, fever would have got you then. But a giant, okay, here's a good...
But then again, a giant to them as well could have been someone looking like LeBron, like LeBron James or Shaquille O'Neal.
My boss said something the other day respect to a building. And I said, it's not a very big building. And he went, well, to an ant, a puddle is an ocean. So there you go.
Granted, we're trying to look at some stuff scientifically a little bit here.
To something that's 5 foot tall, a 6 foot tall person, even I'm 5 foot eight. 6 foot tall person's a lot taller than me. It's just 4 inches. A 6 foot tall. I mean, you think of it like this: 5 foot tall. Well, if Goliath was 6 foot five, 6 foot six. Play basketball player. Average basketball player height is in the NBA 6 foot seven. So. You're talking to somebody that's this much taller than David, who was a 5 foot tall man. So yeah, that is a giant. And you're right. If he hit him right here on the temple, it would have killed him stone hammer dead.
Or right, in essence, right between the eyes.
If he was human.
Yeah.
If he was human. But we're talking about some kind of superhuman hybrid that is a hybrid between God's very own children, the angels. His first creation were the angels. Okay, so the Nephilim, they were cast out of heaven, apparently, allegedly. They hit the ground, and they were there during the biblical flood and everything else. So, could they have survived? Yes, absolutely, they could have survived if they are biblical, angelic beings, supernatural. Are we seeing these creatures out here today? It's not for me to say. It's not for me to say for a fact, 100% it is a Nephilim. But it's also not for anyone else to say it's 100% this or that or whatever. Because the simple thing about it is, in my presentation, that we're not going to record people.
Due to several reasons, all through professionalism. It's
one, being this main... But I'm going to give you one little bitty teeny tiny thing. I walk around the room and I say, Chris, what is Bigfoot in your opinion? And you give me your answer. And then I go to the next person. What is Bigfoot in your opinion? They give me the answer. The next, very next slide, I put everything up there already written. $100 right now says that 7 out of the 10 items up there will be said in that room in an hour. And the fact of the matter is everybody is right and everybody is wrong, because it's black and white with this. Somebody's right, somebody's wrong. Are they flesh and blood? Yeah, maybe. Are they supernatural? Yeah, maybe. We don't know. I've been in the woods and I've seen lights. I've heard electricity sounds that, you know, that sort of stuff. I've heard clicking, whistling from disembodied voices. Can't explain that. And with having Bigfoot activity all around me at the same time.
Could you give your in your opinion why we haven't really found any remains yet.
I believe they bury their dead. And also, do you know how hard it is to find a bear skeleton? It's very, very almost impossible to find a bear skeleton, a bear body. And there, you know, there's bear out right there. Even a deer. I mean, you go out in the woods, any? You ever go out in the woods?
I used to a while.
You ever find a deer body?
No. I'm just asking your...
Well, somebody yeah, asked me one time, said, well, yeah, that's true, but I see deer all the time on the highway. Well, that's great. Go out in the middle of the woods where you know for a fact there's a population of 1,000 deer. They got to live. They got to die. If they live, they got to die, just like you and I, just like Bigfoot. If they live, they have to die. That is the natural order of things. Even the supernatural. Even Goliath. We'll go back to that good roundabout way here. Goliath being whatever he was, he died. He had to die. Jesus, the Son of God, had to die. That was his cross to bear, though. No pun intended. It is what everything on this earth has in common. You and I, to the smallest microbes, we are created and we do die. Humans, we bury our dead. We cremate our dead. We launch them into space now. But there's also other factors. Porcupines, they eat bone. They get all their nutrients from dead animal bones. Coyotes will sit and gnaw on bones. They're a dog. They're a canine. They'll sit and gnaw on bones. Wolves, the same way. They'll sit and gnaw on bones. So you're...
Not to mention boar and...
Boar will eat bones. Most animals out there will eat bones because a fresh kill, a fresh dying animal, what is in the center of that bone?
Marrow.
Oh, and what is so special about marrow?
It has a lot of nutrients.
Oh, there you go. That's what it is. So it's easy pickings for something like that. You want to see something cool, get on the internet and look up the body farm down in Knoxville, Tennessee, and watch the decomposition of a deer. And they only put it out for a week. Man, it's gone in a week. So you figure if one of these things die in a forest that's, I don't know,
a couple thousand
yeah, a couple,
acres.
A couple hundred thousand acres. Think about Yellowstone. They
not
never.
There's a lot of, I think there's a lot of areas in Canada that are unexplored.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth and so on.
There's areas right here in Virginia that's never been seen with human eyes. Believe it or not, that's truth. Never had human feet stepped up on, even by the Native Americans. Never been graced by us. Still in its natural form. So, when people tell me, I've been hunting for 45 years. Oh, yeah, okay, cool. So, you hunt like I do. You probably go to the same area every year. Uh-huh. Well, I ain't never seen a Bigfoot, so you're saying because you've never seen a Bigfoot or found a footprint or seen a body or had anything happen in that, say, 1 mile radius over billions of acres of land, Bigfoot don't exist. Because it don't exist in that 1 mile radius. Get what I'm saying?
True. A lot of folks, I think I brought this up with Daniel in our interview with him a couple of months back, that the panda has been a recent discovery over the past 100 and change years. For the longest time, it's been, in essence, considered a cryptid, if I may use that term, in regards to Bigfoot.
You're going to be surprised when you see my presentation, because I talk about the platypus, the gorilla, and the kangaroo. European explorers came back from Australia claiming they seen deers hopping on two legs. Now, you're full of it. There's no way. Deer don't hop on two legs. Oh, lo and behold, there's a kangaroo. Looks like a deer. Looks like a souped-up deer with some springs on the back end. All right. Lowland gorilla. They never thought that something man-like was out there. And they killed them and brought them back to the New World and said, here, there they are. Behold, the mountain gorilla. And sure enough, they were discovered. Kangaroos, lowland gorillas, platypus, giraffes, all them guys, they were considered cryptids before the cryptid term was coined.
Right.
Now,
oh, I'm sorry. It's okay, man. You didn't know you walked by.
on average. And this is a low number. This is a low end. I'm not going on the high end. On average, there's 1,000 new species discovered every year. Give or take a couple hundred thousand. Because we know more about the surface of Mars than we do the bottom of the ocean, Chris. We know more about the surface of the moon than we do the deepest, darkest forest on this earth.
I've always told people that nature has an uncanny habit of going, here, hold my beer.
Yeah, hold my beer. You think that's funny? Here, hold my beer.
Because how many times, if you want to say over the last 60, maybe 70 years, when we haven't explored all of the oceans for it, but when we've explored it, it's like, oh, we haven't, fish can't survive this far. Man, and all of a sudden, boom, here, hold my beer.
You put it in real perspective, okay? We're in the year 2019. 119 years ago, the thought of getting in a contraption, taking off, flying to New York was complete and total malarkey. Dreaming, you're dreaming. That's never going to happen. 15, 16 years later, we're flying in World War I. Fast forward 2019, I can get on a jet airplane in Lexington, Kentucky, and be in New York City in an hour and 28 minutes. I can leave New York City on an airplane and fly to LA, California, in just a little over 5 hours. 100 years ago, it took you 3 weeks. So, you put all of this in perspective. We're still learning. That's just like, everybody's like, the global warming thing. Cool. How long have y'all been keeping record on that? 50 years. Okay. So, who's to say this ain't just a phase that we're going through? You know, ever since I was a kid, I'm almost 40 years old. Since I was a kid, I can always remember Kentucky being hard in hell in the summer, warm in the winter. We get a couple of cold snaps in January and February, and then it's right back to the heat. So, you know, we're still learning. And it fascinates me. Frogs. Good example. Frogs. Good species to kind of concentrate on. Just off the Bigfoot subject. There's average a new species of frog discovered at least once a week in the Amazon jungles of Asia. A new species. Well, this one looks like that one, but it's got a different DNA. Huh. It's a new species. So, what we're looking for is one DNA strand that says primate unknown for Bigfoot.
And I hate to end it there, but on that note, I want to thank you for your interview.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have been talking to you.
Yeah, stay for my presentation. Just because you can't record it don't mean you can't stay.
Not a problem. Thank you.
My head is already quit hurting.
Again, that was Michael Cook. I hope all of you enjoyed that interview. Again, Michael Cook, if you're listening, thank you for the interview. And we're sorry we couldn't stay for your panel. We were just completely beat for the rest of the day. We had an early start to our day. So that being said, I'm going to close out this episode. And I want, again, special thanks to Daniel Benoit. And special thanks to all of those who allowed us to either do an interview or record their panel. So thank you so much, everyone. I'm going to close out by saying, if any of you want to join in the conversation, as always, you can do so by emailing us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. You could also leave us a message on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast. While you're there, you could also leave a comment under our pinned post, which for this particular episode. You could also leave us a direct message on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is longcoatmafia. Or send us a direct message at longcoatmafia. So that is our Instagram handle is longcoatmafia. Let's see what else. We do have a mixer.com channel. It is mixer.com /LCMP. The letters are capitalized. And our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/LongCoatMafiaPD. Just want to let you guys know, we should be letting you all know when we do a Twitch stream or Mixer stream, just that we've been busy right now. We should start getting back into that. Let's see what else. If you wish to listen to anything in our back catalog, like our Daniel Benoit interview, you can easily do that by going to our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and just scrolling back to whenever you want. Not just back to like January, February, when Daniel Benoit was on our broadcast, but you could go all the way back to the beginning of our show almost 4 years ago and see how far we've come in that time frame. But if you are a mobile, if you're still a desktop type person, you can also catch us on Stitcher, Stitch Radio, I should say, Spotify. Where else can you find us? iTunes /Apple Podcasts, because they are kind of changing their model of how they do things. And where else? That's pretty much it. For the exception of where you atypically find podcasts, we do have a YouTube channel where we post a lot of our video supplements, like our walkthroughs at events like the ECBRO's second annual Bigfoot convention. Plus, we have some other stuff from the Library Comic Con to put together and post up. So stay tuned for that. But there's going to be what would be a YouTube exclusive will become a Facebook exclusive because of how YouTube operates. But if you still want to check us out on YouTube and possibly listen to a few of our shows up there, just go head on to YouTube and do a search for Long Coat Mafia Podcast, and our show's channel does come up. And while you're there, please hit that subscribe button, and hit that when you watch a video, hit that like button, just like if you're on Facebook, and go to our page, which again is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. Hit that like button, and if you like one of our posts, and especially our podcast posts, please hit that like button and hit that share button, and let us beat out that Facebook algorithm. Please do so. And despite how Facebook is pretty much the evil ones in this situation, more on that in a different episode. Now, if you are mobile, you can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify app, the Stitcher Radio app, plus the Podbean app. So there's a lot of places you could get our show. We're happy to bring this content to you. We will be including a lot of the links to where to find Mike Cook and Ted Von Sun in the description, in essence, down below for the show on like Podbean and all that. So please look these fellows up. So take care, good night, and catch you next episode. So a lot of great things to come.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.